The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. How many people do you know who are divorced? How many people in your circle of friends had to get married? How many of your friends come from broken homes? And how many people do you know who are trapped in an unhappy marriage and may frankly confide to you that this is true? Answers to these questions and many like them portray the sad facts of one of the worst sociological problems of our time, breakup of the family and the home. Dr. Nathan W. Ackerman of Columbia University told a symposium on the family search for survival at the University of California School of Medicine, "There is something deeply wrong with our whole way of life." He said, "In our time, the family does not know what it stands for." And teenagers are reflecting this disturbance. Juvenile trends, he pointed out, show one, antisocial behavior with acts of unprecedented violence, particularly against innocent victims. Two, a sexual revolution with growing promiscuity. Three, an obsession with everything that is hot. Hot jazz, hot dancing, hot rods for an ever new kick. Four, overconformity with peers. Five, loss of hope and faith, the spirit of adventure, the creative spark. And six, he said, conflict with family and society on goals, on what people stand for. And seventh and last, vulnerability toward emotional breakdown. But he went on to talk about trends showing parallel immaturity and conflict in adults. And you see that, as he cited, in the people becoming obsessed with themselves. Things such as dieting, wig wearing, over-exercising, a horror and fear of aging and death. And he pointed out, secondly, no easy, spontaneous show of warmth and tenderness. Third, he talked about the invasion of the murderous competitiveness of the business ethic into the family. And fourth, he cited increased emphasis on status and money as success. Fifth, the inconsistency between the ethics they preach to their children and the corruption they practice. The old adage, don't do as I do as I say do, doesn't work too well with kids. Now, basically, Dr. Ackerman said, parents of troubled adolescents are plagued by immaturity themselves, which breeds a chain of undeveloped people unable to commit themselves to adult responsibility in work, love, and in loyalty to family. Yes, there is something deeply wrong with our whole way of life. Our families have lost their purpose. Our homes don't know what they stand for anymore. Husbands tolerate wives, but don't really live with them. Wives exist with husbands, but they don't really live with them as marital partners. Now, the sad facts of the breakup of the family and the home are that divorce is leaping higher and higher, out of all proportion in the United States to the populations of other countries. And so many of the resultant evils that you see about you in the news of teenage frustration, disillusionment, and resentment that finds its way into violent acts of civil disobedience and crime, and the hatred and the resentment toward the status quo and the adult generation and American involvement abroad and this and that and the other thing that teenagers become excited about is also a part of the problem. The fact that large percentages of murders involve husbands and wives, whether living together or estranged. All these things and many other evils can be placed squarely at the doorstep of our growing numbers of unhappy and breaking homes. And you need to remember again that for every couple who actually take the legal steps to become divorced, there are many more who simply separate, and for those who separate, there are others who may share the same house, but for whom marriage has become an empty, meaningless, sad, boring, irksome, nettling experience, an unsettling experience, where the home is really slightly more than a hotel room that's shared with strangers. Well, why? What's happening? What causes it? To get the answers, divorce lawyers, judges, sociologists or social workers, psychologists have together over the many years amassed virtually tons of evidence involving personal experiences and attestations on the part of people involved, many public opinion surveys, the divorce court statistics themselves, but evidence from multiple thousands of cases, and it's almost as if with one voice they will tell you that the thing wrong with marriages is that which leads to marriage, courtship, dating, the preparation for marriage, or the lack of it, And among these things, they cite everything from people who get married because they have to marriage too early, to marriage based upon a so-called love, which is really nothing more than infatuation, and all the other host of evils about lack of preparedness for marriage, lack of understanding what marriage is, people marrying because they had to, or marrying accidentally, marrying without really knowing the prospective mate. All of these things are cited, and many other points. The question is, what is marriage? What does it stand for? Why is it? Who invented it? Are there laws that govern it? Laws which, if they were followed, would absolutely guarantee marital happiness and success? It's time we asked these questions and found the answers, because the answers are obtainable. Now, very few of you have thought to look in a source that is right there close to hand. The one source that answers these questions, it might surprise many of you to find a book you've had about your home for years contained solutions to marital problems. There was a divorce lawyer who claimed he used the Bible in helping him prepare cases and solving problems for people. Now, it so happens that in the Bible, a consistent bestseller, though read by very few, are many, many laws and many, many test cases and many examples of people who went the wrong way and made mistakes that many of you may be making, and a great deal of good, up-to-the-moment, sound, practical advice about marriage, about dating, about the laws that govern marital relationships. But people assume that the Bible is a sort of a book of poetry of old philosophers seeking to aggrandize their own race or to promulgate their own ideas. They assume that the Bible is a sort of a pseudo-religious, hyper-sanctimonious book of a lot of spiritual-sounding phraseology, spiritual salt and pepper, I've called it, a lot of statements about loving the Lord and this and that. They hear, I think, religious people talk. They think, well, boy, if that's the way the Bible is, then I don't want any of that. Well, I'm religious people. I believe in what the Bible says. And I don't come on the air and tell you that this program is going to be a blessing to your heart. I just don't. I can't exactly find those phrases in the Bible. That's the reason I don't. Now, I can find in the Bible some real good, straight-from-the-shoulder, hard, everyday, coldly analytical, practical facts and guidance for today's modern marriages. I can find in the Bible all about marriage, what it is, why it is, its purposes. I can find in the Bible the laws that guarantee marriage will work. Well, let me tell you this, regardless of your ideas about the Bible, one thing for sure, the divorce lawyers have found, sociologists have proved, the deeper the religious convictions, the better the chances for a successful marriage, and the lower the divorce rate in any given community of people who may have deep religious conviction. Now, I'm not talking about one religion versus another, regardless as to anybody's bigotries against one religion or another. And people might take exception to some religions and say, well, yes, but I don't believe that way. Well, that's fine. That's your privilege. But regardless as to what your point of view may be about one particular religion or another, you've got to admit that the deeper that family's religious ties, the greater the chance for that family to stay together. That is a fact. That is true. Now, it's been said by these divorce lawyers and others that the thing really wrong with marriage is courtship and dating. So I've been talking in a series of broadcasts on The World Tomorrow about the seven keys to successful marriage, seven major points that ought to be thought about in dating. Then I'm going to come back and sort of recapitulate the whole thing again, as I did earlier, and talk about young dating and at what age, and whether or not going steady is right, and what is a practical date, where do people go, what should they do, what time of day, when do they get in, the whole thing about who to date and why. But the first major point that I've mentioned in the last two programs, things young people ought to think about versus what they do think about, one of them is physical health. Now, we heard in the last program what teenagers, or boys and girls who date, want out of and expect from each other. And some of this is really revealing, because the girls expected boys who were, I can tell you real quickly what some of them were. This is a sort of a summary of information gleaned from many, many girls who were questioned about it. So let's hear from the girls again, let them speak, and we'll put it in the language of the time. They wanted boys who were not last-minute dates, who arrived on time, who dressed appropriately, who were neat and clean, boys who would not discuss other dates, who meet a girl's family gracefully, who use good English and take the girls to nice places. They wanted boys who would compliment them on their appearance, who would not brag and talk loudly. And they wanted boys who would consult them about the evening's plans and who did not honk while he was sitting outside to announce that he's waiting, and a boy who was neat in personal matters. So again, what was it they wanted? And the boys had the same type of thing that they wanted. Well, you could analyze it this way. They wanted the most painless and the most enjoyable evening. They wanted the best time. They wanted the dating partner who would give them the most and from whom they would receive perhaps the most, but to whom they would have to give the least. And the idea was, what is your definition of a good time? That was pretty much the way they put it. They wanted to go with people who were good-looking or cool or exciting. They didn't want to go with people who were intelligent, who were stimulating, who were considerate, who were faithful, who were loyal, who were full of integrity and mores and ethics. They wanted people who were cool and smooth and sharp and attractive. Well, now, analyzing all this type of thing in the cold light of day, let me just tell you once more that 50% of these young teenage marriages are failing, and that 40% of them are getting married because they have to. And the gigantic percentages of them are ending in the divorce courts even in the first year. So I could repeat all of that again, but I said it last time, so if you didn't hear that, let that suffice just to recapitulate a moment about what people wanted about their dating standards, what they really expected from other people on a date. They didn't ask for intelligent people, talented people, sensible, competent, thinking people, people with alert, educated, thinking parents. Parents who had kept their sharpness and alertness of mind and their physical health and appearance, they just wanted a good time for the moment. But why don't they think about these qualifications in dating? Now, here's just how important physical health is for the final statement on this, and then I'll get into the second major point. Physical health is just this important. You are putting together, when you marry, a factory for the production of children. Let's put it coldly and rather analytically for a moment. You need to consider what kind of stock people come from and what kind of children are going to be born. And if you want to marry a fellow with a long, scrawny neck and buck teeth and an Adam's apple, that's fine. You may really love him. And the way his ears stick out may be peculiarly attractive to you. But let's at least go into marriage with both eyes wide open and realize that if you marry this guy, that's the way your son's going to look. That's all I'm trying to get across on this worldwide educational program. Think about it, because dating leads to marriage. Going steady leads to intimacies before marriage, which it shouldn't, and often results in an untimely accidental marriage, with about one chance out of six or eight of staying together very long. But it's time we took a look at the dating habits of our young people, at your own dating habits. If you are a teenager, you ought to ask what age you are and whether you ought to be dating anyhow, and we'll get to that later. But it's time we ask by finding out what are the results. Now, don't just ask in a naive, juvenile way, what's the most fun? I'm all for fun. I enjoy fun. But you know, the kind of fun you ought to want is the kind of fun that is still fun tomorrow and next year and 10 years from now. It's still fun, even when you look back upon it. And it never comes to the point where it's not fun. Fun is always fun if it's real good fun. The kind that ought to be entered into. But if it has the wrong result and it kicks back tomorrow or a couple of months from now or next year, then that's not very much fun, is it? You can't call a drunk who has to reach out about 2 feet to scratch his head and hardly knows his direction and says, pour me into bed. You can't say this guy's having fun. Not when you look at his blinding headache the next day and what he's done to his body and realize that he has so absolutely damaged his circulatory system, his brain and his liver and his kidneys and everything else, that it's just like standing around asking someone to beat on you with a club. He's done himself about that much physical damage. You can't call that fun. And teenagers who were sitting around in portable bedrooms with their minds absolutely idle, getting into all kinds of problems that might lead toward horrible situations involving yet unborn young creatures who don't deserve that kind of a broken, ready-made broken home, you could call it, who don't deserve to be born in institutions for unwed mothers, you can't call that fun. Teenagers like to say, well, I think that so long as we don't hurt anybody, it must be right. Hurt anybody? What an empty, hollow, tragic sound that is. It hurts everybody. It hurts you. It hurts the other person. It hurts both parents. It hurts church. It hurts school. It hurts community. It hurts race. It hurts society in general. And most of all, it hurts the hundreds of thousands of little innocent babies who are born never having laid eyes on Dad. They don't even know what he looks like. So this thing of physical health is important, but most people's minds don't stray beyond mere physical attraction. And the trouble is, with all the billions of dollars of the giant cosmetic clothing and fake hair industries today, it's becoming increasingly difficult to even assess personal appearance. Are you sure his teeth are his? Are you sure her hair belongs to her? Are you sure that this pimple is just a passing pimple, or is it serious acne? You know, I think a lot of people are married today, long age 35, 40, 45, and I can prove this, by the way, by statistical fact. I saw a survey taken by the older marrieds whose children were now teenagers or married or had left the home, and I was amazed at the gigantic proportion of them who said if they had the opportunity, and that meant economically, and if they could find a different job and start over, but they felt trapped, but if they had an opportunity, they would divorce and marry somebody else. That over the long haul, the way this mate turned out in marriage was so disgusting to them that they wanted to get rid of their marital partner. Now, if they had thought of these things I'm talking about way in advance, this wouldn't have happened. So the first major category I've talked about is physical health. Stock, breeding, parents, because children are involved. And not only that, but continuing activity on into life, continuing health, and it's vitally important to marriage. Now, the second major consideration, and directly related to physical health, is mental health, or call it mental and emotional health. Now realize this, teenagers, and all of you, whether you've got little tiny children, you're rearing some, and whether you're a young teenage couple, you've been married and got a boy on the way, if you can tell whether it's a boy, which you can't. Realize this, and let's admit it together. The world is full of a bunch of fruits and nuts. I've heard it said that's why they call California the land of fruits and nuts. But I'll tell you, when you drive down, I had occasion to get a haircut in Beverly Hills not long ago, and I drove back to Pasadena along Hollywood Boulevard, and I was absolutely amazed. It had been the first time that I'd been along that street in a lot of years, and I had really seen a lot of nuts around the world before. I'd been around a few places in the world, all right. I'd seen kooks and weirdies and nuts in the streets of Cairo, and I've seen them standing around in Rome, and I've seen them in Paris. I strongly suspect some of them are driving taxi cabs there. But as I drove along Hollywood Boulevard, I could hardly believe my eyes. I saw more of these weirdies, and I mean some of them weren't just beatniks. They weren't just young people who were trying to display by their manner of hair and dress their resentment and rebellion toward the status quo in adult society. These were people whose minds were about gone. I mean people with the shakes, whose teeth were gone, the long hair, old tramps. People whose complexions were gone and whose physical health was shot, and people who were a little off in the upper story. So there are a lot of kooks in the world. Now, what about it? Do you believe that statement? The stats are that there are 19 million Americans alone. I don't know what you people in Australia have to suffer, but there are 19 million. One out of 10, 10% of any population figure is a staggering statistic. And this is not my idea. This is a statement from the American Medical Association, and they have declared that mental illness is the nation's most pressing and complex problem today. One out of 10 girls of the boys you date and in your high school are a little off in their upper story. Now, it could be that one out of 10 of you girls are too, fellas. You ought to think about that, because the American Medical Association did not differentiate between male and female. It's one out of 10 people who have enough mental or emotional disorders that they are serious enough to be considered needful of psychiatric treatment. Now, what happens later on when a bride finds out her husband is a dope addict or a burglar or deeply antisocial? What about this man down in Texas who went up to the top of a tower and killed everybody in sight? What about his friends and his wife? What did they think? Could they have possibly known in advance were there symptoms of this type of behavior? What if a young bride in the first couple of years finds out her husband is a member of some strange cult, or maybe he's about as bigoted as a charging rhinoceros? She can discuss anything with him, from the weather to the war in Vietnam, and he's an enraged beast. He has absolutely nothing but prejudice in his head. What happens if she finds out He's got hallucinations, or he can't sleep at night, or he's got a deep-seated inferiority complex, or maybe he fancies he's Napoleon. Mental stability, emotional control are becoming increasingly rare commodities. And it's time you surveyed in your dating, what about the mental health and stability? What about a keen, sharp, alert mind? What about emotions in control in this prospective mate? How would a husband feel if he wakes up someday and finds out his wife has the fear of being followed, or she's got dementia praecox, or schizophrenia, or becomes a paranoid? It happens. I'm telling you, it happens, and it happens all too often. And people say, oh, my, if I had only known ahead of time. How does a husband feel when a wife is confined to an institution? How does a wife feel when she finds her husband has been arrested for child molestation? It happens. Now, you know, a real good surfer may end up a psychotic, girls. A real smooth dancer, fellows, and a neat dresser who might make you look good at the party could end up becoming a neurotic pill swallower later. Just about as mentally stable as a mosquito. A smooth conversationalist who doesn't honk his horn and wait in the car outside may turn out to be a deviant. Wouldn't it be better to find out ahead of time? Now, how do you find out ahead of time? Well, let me tell you how you find out ahead of time. You find out ahead of time by getting to know one another. And you get to know one another by giving it time. And by the kind of dating that is right out in the open light of day, the constructive dating which includes family and friends, which includes participation in sports as well as spectating at them, which includes enough different situations and circumstances where sooner or later you're going to see this individual thwarted. You're going to see them denied something they want. You're going to have them express themselves about something that really bugs them, as they say. You're going to have time to get to know this person and time to get to know what kind of a mind they've got, what kind of an attitude, what kind of parents and background do they come from, what kind of heredity and environment produced them and made them what they are. What do they believe about politics? Maybe your family have always been Democrat or Republican or Tories or something else. Now, whatever they've been in your country, what about this kid you're infatuated with at the moment? What do his parents think? Are you going to find out that you march down the aisle about that time he turns to you and says, incidentally, I like the children reared in my religion? You need to discuss those things ahead of time. I have a number of articles about this that I want to give to you in the future. One of them from a well-known figure, a singer in the Western world in the United States, Pat Boone, what he has to say about it, whether or not it's for real. And he said the very first rule of dating was, in preparation for marriage, give it the time test. Get acquainted. Now, it's not because Pat Boone had to learn that from bitter experience so much as he deals with young people a great deal. He talks to them. He goes to their parties. He hears what they have to say. And this article was published in the Ladies' Home Journal in the United States, and it was about choosing a mate. About marriage magic was the title of the article. And he said, get acquainted. If you're hasty, you may find yourself quaking at the altar like the bride whose mother found her weeping bitterly before the wedding and said to her, my dear, this is no time to cry. Why, the day I was married was the happiest day of my life. But that was different, sobbed the girl. You married Dad, and I'm marrying a complete stranger. Well, that's about right. That's the way people feel. Well, don't let it happen to you. You don't need to be afraid to take the time to test the caliber of your love. And if it wilts in the spring, then marriage isn't going to keep it alive. Now, you know, a lot of people will survey, as I said in the last program, the pedigree of a potential pet with a lot more care than they will the stock, the heredity, and the environment of a potential mate. A lot of these same husbands who later on take a job in a corporation and maybe reach the managerial field are going to be a lot more circumspect about choosing a prospective employee because they want to make sure he's not accident-prone if he's using a $5 million computer than they took in selecting the mother of their children and their lifelong companion. Doesn't make sense, does it? The people go skipping gaily off to marriage about as casually as they select a movie. It doesn't make a bit of sense that people marry people because they think they're smooth dressers or great dancers or good conversationalists, or they just happen to have the kind of appearance that make their girlfriends jealous. You're not marrying the social stratum. You're not marrying all the girlfriends in the social world. You're not marrying the gang. You're marrying one individual. And marriage is for real. Marriage is forever. Marriage is for on and on and on. And marriage is something that no human being has the right to separate once it is a true marriage and really bound by a higher court that few people seem to know very much about. Now, you know, a lot of girls will say, well, Daddy, we're just having such a ball together, and he's such a cool character and good-looking, and oh, he's kind of kooky, too, and I just love the way he combs his hair. Oh, balderdash, that doesn't mean he's going to make a good husband and provider. It might be nice if you can express yourself that way about somebody that you enjoy being with, but who are you enjoying and why? Are you enjoying yourself because he makes you feel good? Or are you enjoying it because it's so constructive and because you're mutually sharing and you're learning? And you're growing in mental and physical and emotional control. It's time we took a good long look at the dating habits in this Western world, because I'll tell you this, with more than 1,000 divorce decrees per day just 1 year ago, and it's worse now, with one divorce every 90 seconds, it's time we asked ourselves, what is happening? Why is it? Because the people who are suffering are not the people who are perpetrating the misdeeds. It's the little ones, the little sweet babies that you'd be glad to take up in your own arms and nuzzle and kiss. They're the poor little kids that end up on the short end of the stick. And people say, well, it doesn't hurt anybody. Oh, yes, it does. Now, I could go on and on and on quoting statistics, like, for instance, the statistic that 75% of all young people in juvenile hall come from broken homes. And on I could go. But you're going to have to come to the point where you convince yourself marriage is serious enough that you're going to take a good long look at anybody you're about to get hitched to, because you realize once you're hitched, first of all, it's pretty traumatic to get unhitched, and it's also against the laws of a higher court that you ought to investigate. But secondly, it can be one of the most absolutely tragic experiences of all of your life. Now, let me conclude this program by just quoting again what Maureen, a tall 18-year-old blonde, said. She'd gotten married, but her marriage ended up in an absolute farce. She said, the day after the wedding, I knew it was a mistake. As time went by, it got worse. She talked about the bills, about pressures and court orders to even repossess some of the things they'd try to buy. And she said, in her own words, it was all so different from the way I pictured it. I don't know exactly how it's supposed to be, but it's supposed to be more fun, different than this. He seemed so different before I married him. This man on the outside, so big and good-looking and nice, but so afraid on the inside, so chicken, afraid of his mother, his father, afraid of everything. He was a baby, really a child. The worst thing that happened to me was that I learned to hate. And she said, it's all out. It's all gone out of me. I'm through. I'm kind of empty. I hate that man. Next time, she said, I'll look for someone more mature. Well, those are the words of perhaps more than just one person. Hundreds of thousands today. Don't let it be you. Write for these articles I've announced on how to have a happy marriage and the one on how to solve family arguments. And if you are married and have teenagers, take a good long look at their dating practices. Now, keep listening to every program in this series. I'll continue on this next time. Write for these articles on how to have a happy marriage and how to solve family arguments, and write for the booklet on the plain truth about childbearing. It also talks a great deal about the family. And the current number of the Plain Truth magazine has an article about the 7 laws to physical health. It's free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.